Well, the operating cost estimate is correct, about $7.5 million from FDOT. A portion of that is offset by a federal subsidy. Approximately 25% would be paid for by the federal government. And then there's farebox revenues. And so farebox revenues should be about $3 million, the federal subsidy about $2 million. So that would leave about the $2 million that has been widely publicized as the amounts that the local governments would have to contribute to the shortfall in operating costs on an ongoing basis.
What about the $1.2 billion for construction of the rail line? Where is that coming from?
Well, the majority of the capital cost comes from the federal government. A portion comes from the state government. And much of those are already earmarked for those purposes. So if the governor approves the project this week, we should see construction start.
But the train itself will never actually turn a profit. It'll never actually be profitable, right?
Never. It'll never turn a profit. But it's not expected to. I think if it meets its expectations, it'll generate farebox revenues of approximately $3 million, leaving approximately $2 million as the ongoing subsidies for the local governments to pick up. That's generally in the ballpark of other mass transit systems. They pay for approximately a half of their operating costs out of farebox revenues. Many of them get a federal subsidy. The balance is picked up by the local governments.
Now, as you know, that is exactly what the opponents of the project are telling the governor, that, as you point out, not enough people are going to ride this train to make it profitable. And they say it is therefore a losing proposition. So where is the benefit?
Well, there's huge benefit in that it stimulates real estate development along the lines and especially at the stations. So the local governments are likely to see increases in real estate values and increases in ad valorem tax revenues that exceed the amount of the operating subsidy that they would be required to participate in.
But what I wonder, Hank, is when would that happen? I've heard some developers and real estate economists say it'll take 20 years for the real estate values to rise to the level where income from that property will equal the operating expenses for the rail line. Some others even say that profitability is 40 years out or perhaps longer.
I think that's overly pessimistic. I think the market will respond more quickly. Certainly that was the case in Charlotte. Certainly that was the case in Washington, D.C. when the system was built. So I think we'll see markets react more promptly, especially in an environment where we have elevated gasoline prices, and those gasoline prices are expected to stay elevated for some time. Now, it's not going to happen tomorrow, but I think a horizon of 10 years or so for the break even for the local governments is possible, 15 probably. And I think, you know, if this project was promoted in this community 10 or 20 years ago, I don't think it would have worked as well as it may work now. We've seen a renaissance of people wanting to and desiring to live in urban areas, a substantial change from 10 and 20 years ago. So if that pattern continues, then it would support development of a commuter rail system and support more densification as more people desire an urban lifestyle that would be facilitated by this type of commuting system.
Now, the closest analog we have in Florida for the SunRail system is South Florida's Tri-Rail system, which most everyone agrees has not been a success. In fact, the legislature had to bail it out in 2009 to the tune of $15 million. Now, how will SunRail differ from Tri-Rail, and why will it succeed where Tri-Rail has not?
Tri-Rail certainly was not successful. The equipment is entirely different. The timing, the location of the stations relative to the urban areas will be different for this Central Florida commuter system than the Tri-Rail system, Tom.
So the other primary reason often cited by SunRail advocates is alleviating traffic congestion on I-4, which everyone in Central Florida knows is a commuter's nightmare. But I wonder, would enough people really ride the SunRail line to make a noticeable difference? And if our population starts to grow again, as you predicted that it would when we spoke last week, would that offset that difference? And I-4 will still be crowded.
Well, I-4 will always be crowded and congested. This sort of Downs rule of peak hour congestion that says no matter how many lanes of traffic you build, people will just use the more convenient time and congest up the road at some point during the course of 24 hours. So that's not really the issue. The issue is, do we make an increment of benefit? Do we take an increment of traffic off the roadway? I think the answer to that is yes. And if we would move towards tolling the road, and there's been some talk about that, and if we would have differential tolls by time of day like they have in London, we could encourage people rather dramatically to give them economic incentive to use the SunRail system. So my point is it's somewhat policy driven. We can create policies that make more or fewer people use the SunRail system.